G'day everybody. If some people are on live, I'm going solo without any of Jenny's help. So I think I've pressed the right buttons and I think I'm on live. Oh yeah, Kelly's watching. That means I've done something right. Lizzie's watching. Excellent. I'm a bit of a computer guru now. So anyway, awesome. It's up and working. Sorry I'm running a little bit late. I've been on the road sort of all the afternoon and hit a bit of sort of traffic. And anyway, I'm here and I'm at Burrong Equestrian Centre, which is at which is on the sort of western road from Geelong heading west. It's probably about an hour from Melbourne. Beautiful equestrian centre, really nice arena, so I'm looking forward to the clinic that we got on the weekend here. We've got a two-day clinic and I've got some lessons around tomorrow around Melbourne. So what I'm going to do now, I've got quite a lot of questions that have come through from people from when Jenny posted, any questions to be answered. And hopefully I'll get through quite a few of those. I'm just going to have to go through on my phone. And I've just got to call, Jenny's just calling me right now just to make sure I'm okay, so I'll just accept that call. She's probably going to tell me that I need to do something. Hello? I'm live, so I'm talking to you live in front of everybody, so I might talk to you later on after it. Now I'm going to go back into the questions because I've lost them. Into Facebook. So I apologise everybody, I'm better at helping people with horses than I am at operating a telephone, so bear with me for a second. I've just got to go into the questions which I did have up, which is still up. Excellent. So I've had quite a few questions, and there's also another question which has come through which is underneath, which I want to answer tonight. And I may start with that question because it's a question I've been meaning to answer on Facebook, but I thought I'd answer it live on this talk. So the first question, which I think is a really good question, and you know, for people going through the videos, there's a lot of talk on me. There's a lot of talk about. Hang on a minute. I had a bit of a blip there. I've got really poor service at the moment, so. Just hold on. I'll go back and find that question in a bit because I've the phone just bleeped out on me. So I'm going to go through the questions that I've got up now. A question from Sam Phillips. Now Sam sent a question. What are the key things that you will teach on the ground before backing a young horse? So before I'm sort of wanting to step up and ride a young horse, I mean you can teach them lots of things on the ground. And once upon a time I was sort of starting a lot of horses and I realised that there was a lot more things that I could have done when I was on the ground to help them out. So the key things I want to know though is there's understanding of energy, which is very important, okay? Steering, brakes, okay? So now that you might say, oh, okay, well, yep, got all that. And then the horse feeling safe around me and the things that I sort of use around the horse, I suppose, like all the saddles and all the objects and things like that. So first of all, going into the sort of steering wheel, the things I really would like a horse to know under saddle is how to understand feel, how to direct through feel, how to steer through feel. So I want them turning nicely, I want them backing nicely, I want them to loosen up. Now it doesn't matter if you're doing it in a bit or a holder or a side pull, whatever it is, as long as those horses understand how to loosen up and think backwards, think left, think right, and bend softly and move their feet softly towards the feel of a rein when you're turning and coming back into the reins into a backup. Because without a backup, you won't have a two rein stop when you're riding. So those things, the better the horse understands those, the better you know when you ride it's going to be. Now, the next thing So basically, you can teach those from teaching a lunging circle to getting a horse to walk a circle around you, steer into you, and then you can eventually, you know, do things like steer the rope from the other side, just hang it over its back, come back around behind the horse, steer it away. You can start a horse like that. You can go to long reining, and on the videos that of some of the long reining videos, I've got a horse is learning on one rein how to send out and seek and think away. So the next thing you want a horse to be soft and be able to operate with a nice soft focus on you and be calm on you. But then you also want them to think away and travel away with confidence. So that's where when you send them out on one rein, they can find a straight line and walk away and think away from you. And that's really important. You can teach them that. And then when you pick up the rein, they're happy to switch in and steer back and go away and steer back. And you know they can travel in front of you. And even if you sort of expand that one reining to long reining, so the horse can walk out in front, think out in front, and you know, back up in the long reins, things like that. That's always a good thing. But for years I didn't long rein horses, but I did make sure I had a steering wheel and I had brakes on them. The other thing I want is calm understanding of energy. Now, if people have been to my clinics and understand my way of thinking on energy, I provide energy towards the horse's intention. I don't provide my energy in towards the horse to make it ping off the energy. So that's like the difference between like directing a horse somewhere or driving your energy into the horse to make the horse direct off your energy. So you want to know the horse can sort of walk, trot, and even pop into some canters with you guiding without really freaking out away from you. So, you know, if you start to put your horse in a trot around you in a circle and it starts to crab away really fast, then chances are if it sort of walks or trots with you close to it, then it's going to be frightened. Then the next thing, sort of, once I've got those energy transitions, I want to be able to walk beside my horses and even jog beside them, for instance, if you want to take it one step further, and rattle a saddle, rub them all over, have them walking around me calmly while I'm grabbing onto everything and rubbing down their hind legs, rubbing down their front feet, all over, make sure they're used to all that and they're not crabbing away. Because a lot of times, you know, if we're sending a horse away from our energy a lot, sometimes when we sort of do silly things beside them, then suddenly they think, oh, I've got to step away. So I don't want them thinking like that. I want to think that they can stay close and confident around me. And then you know, you've got to expose them to all the tools so they're comfortable with the saddle and the saddle blanket and things like that. And then the next thing that I'd want the young horse to know before I back them is, can I, if you want to, you can lay over them. You know, you can walk them up to a fence, you can sort of walk them up to a mounting block, get them so you're above them and things like that. You can lay over them, things like that. But what I tend to do is once I get a stage that I can comfortably put a saddle on and they can walk, trot, and just pop into a canter in the saddle without going berserk. So I, you know, obviously I'm not going to go through the whole thing. You just sort of want to know things that I want done before I back them. You know, but I've gone through the process of getting them calm with a belly rope and then a saddle and, you know, so forth onwards. Then what I'm going to do is I like to step up in the stirrup, and because they can already walk around me, and I step up in the stirrup and I have my toe just in a little bit and I want them to walk around me while I've got one foot in the stirrup. And then I'll put my foot in the stirrup, get them to walk around me, then I'll step up and I'll just put a bit of weight over, but I can step off really easy. And I'm going to get them to walk and carry me around in a little circle and just bump them just to make them go around me and walk around me on one side, and then I'll step in the other stirrup on the other side, on the off side, and I'll do the same thing. Get them to carry me on the side, and then if anything goes wrong, I just step off them. And then by the time you put two legs and commit, so I've rubbed them on both sides, I've hung over them a bit, got them used to both eyes, then I'll step up and ride them. Yeah, that's a quick overview. There's lots of little things in there, but the biggest thing is that they've got good steering, good backup, good understanding of you being around them without being frightened, and a reasonable control of energy. Like things like just asking them by a little bit of pressure or a little bump by your stirrup that they can move forward freely, and they can move forward freely. The better movement you have in a horse, the better they're going to sort of move when you ride them under saddle, and the better free thinking they are, is in they can think away. The horses that are trapped focus on you doing groundwork, doing circles and all that sort of stuff, and they're always focused on you. They're going to be a bit tough to get them to sort of leave, because when they leave, it's going to be a big change, and then they might get a fright. So they've got to learn to leave and come back, leave and come back. And that's why at one reining out, and long reining is a really good exercise. You don't have to long rein, you can just do one reining and get them prepared for under saddle, but that'll really, really help them out a lot. And there's another question. Susie Anderson asked a question, because it follows straight up from that question, Sam, about yours, which is a good young horse question. What would be your preferred ideal age, time frame to start a young horses? A timeline would be great, as in halter, lead, trained by what age, turned out by what amount of time, started to saddle by what age, turned out, etc. Well, you're asking the most organised horse trainer in Australia for a fairly organised approach to horse training, and so unfortunately, with our own horses, I'm time poor, so I'm really so I'm going to give you a sort of a rough sort of idea, as in doesn't really matter as long as the education with them is good. With tough horses, yeah, well, you want to know that you've spent a bit of time with them before you turn them out. So I'll go through that a bit more. Now, there's a big debate on what is the right age to start a horse and back a horse and things like that. Now, backing a horse and working a horse are two different things. So I don't have a problem if you've got a fair, like if the horse is big enough to carry a rider, though the growth plates won't be set and all those things, you know, and they won't really set to that 6 or 7 age. So, you know, sort of, and these days not a lot of people are going to be waiting until 6 or 7. But working a horse young will wreck a horse, okay? Overloading a horse's mind and body will wreck them. But preparing a horse to be ridden and riding it lightly is not going to wreck a horse. You can do it unless it's a really underdeveloped horse that really struggles to carry the weight of a person. But I'm talking about a normal developed horse. You know, you can get up and ride a two-year-old around and not do a lot of damage to it if your gear fits it okay and things like that. Obviously, there's all these other things. But what does it damage is when you start to tire them and you start to get them to carry weight for long times at a time. And so you can get on a little, your young horse, ride around a two-year-old, get it going around a bit. You know, I wouldn't do a lot of canter work on it at two. I'd sort of stick to just getting it to carry you for short rides and just build that confidence in it and stretch it out a little bit. And then when you know it's going good, and then give it a break and then bring it again a bit later and so forth. And then, you know, they're better off put to work after 4-year-old, but still not hard enough and still not proper work. You got to be just careful on. So in saying that, so first of all, I started the foals there too. With the foals, you can get them in, you know, with their mum fairly early and start touching them over a bit and getting them used to that. I don't do the when you smother the foals and you pick them up. Got a mental blank anyway. And you get them when they're a foal, when they're first born, and you pick them up and you hold them until they sort of settle and quiet and put them down. I don't tend to do that. I like them a little bit wild and reckless when I get them in, because I want to know that they're horse with a free will, not a will that's been taken out of it by me picking it up when they're a baby, because it's the exploration of a young horse that teaches them to learn. And if you smother them and sort of do that imprinting, thanks Joe, thank you very much. That's the word I was thinking of, imprinting. So, you know, when you imprint them, you can suddenly take the fight out of them early, and it's the fight that makes them a horse. That's the fun of a horse, because that's the fight and the exploring and things like that that make them search and make decisions. So, what I want you guys to understand is, if we take that fight out in the imprinting, then maybe we've taken that search out of them, you know. So yes, it is a way of teaching them to give to pressure when they're young, but I like them getting them in a bit older, so it doesn't matter if they're sort of 6 months old when you get them in. I'd like to wean them at 12 months. I don't like to wean them at 6 months, but I definitely start to sort of like to. I don't with my own, just because I'm time poor, but if you want to live in a perfect world, you get the mare in when the foals are, you know, any age, and get them used to you sort of sniffing you and, you know, touching them with things, and that's all fine, and then you can you know, get them to lead around a little bit at a young age. And, you know, about that 6 months old, I think they're strong and, you know, but you can get them in earlier and do it. But, and then put them out with their mum, leave them with their mum, don't overdo them. And then, you know, I'd bring them back in to start them at about 2 year old, to 3 year old. And if I start them at 2 year old, I'd only give them a short start, just a little, you know, maybe 15 lesson, 20 lesson if they're quiet, just quiet work and a bit more, you know, you can spend more time on the long reining on the ground, and then you can sort of spend a bit of time, get them to carry you comfortably under saddle, and then you can bush them again, let them grow out a bit longer till they're sort of between their 3 and 4 and get them back in for some work then and ride them a bit more. But it's the hard... the hard canter work, the hard circle work, the hard, you know, work carrying a rider out in the hills for days when they're young, that's going to sort of break them down. So even when they come back between 3 and 4, we want to build them and just do the steady work so they're not sort of getting sore and they're carrying a lot of weight for a long time. Yeah, and build them like that. So, yeah, but there's no, you know, there's no specific time. It's just as long as you get them, like if it's a really tough older horse that you got in, then obviously you're going to have to spend that breaking, that starting period is going to be a lot longer than a horse that's a real sort of, you know, happy around people sort of horse. So one that's got a real sort of tough personality, you might have to sort of spend more time with them, getting them really to understand all the tools and you know, carrying you and all the things that they have to go through till they accept it and they're comfortable accepting it before you turn them out. Because if you turn them out when they're not comfortable with it and they've just sort of started understanding it, they might come back in with a bit more of an opinion and say, well, hang on a minute, I didn't quite get all that and I've got a few more questions. So very important to sort of... you know, take those tough ones longer. Susie, one more question. Susie, our horses live in herds. When you're working a young horse for a number of weeks, say teaching lots of groundwork or starting on Saturday, do you turn them back out each night with the herd? Yeah, when you're starting horses, years ago in Glen Innes, I had one round yard and a fancy tape late, like when I first ever sort of put an ad in the paper, I had to start work, but I didn't have a setup, so we sort of quickly cut some trees down and built a round yard, and the round yard was about, you know, 5 metres from my doorway, from the shed, because we only lived in a little tin shed and lived in that shed for a long time. So I walked out of my tin shed and I had a round yard, and then I had tape set up. Run a lot of Brumbies in through that tape set up over the years and wild horses, and then I had a laneway that went down to a paddock, and I built one paddock and all the horses got dropped off in that paddock, and then I'd bring them all up and I'd feed them up into the yards and or the tape yard, and then I'd slowly draft them into the round yard and I'd start on one at a time, and that's the way I did it for a while until we started to add a few more things. But pretty well right up until I left Glen Innes, because of our yard situation there, generally I run about 4 or 5 of the starters in one herd at a time, and didn't bother me too much. It's sort of like they went out together, they de-stressed with their own mates and came back in. Every now and again I might get a couple of tricky ones in the yards and keep them in for a little while just to come get them coming to food a bit more and get them a bit more humanised, I suppose. But in general, all the horses I like to keep their normal life. I don't like to say it's a different life, but if they're going to go to a different life, it's important maybe we should start exposing them to that. So yeah, and it's okay if they've got company. And now then, when I moved to Mudgee, we had a few more paddocks, so what I did there is I just paired the horses up, so I had paddocks of 2 instead of 1 big mob, because people were getting a bit more particular about running in big mobs and that. So I wouldn't have one on their own, I'd always try and have 2 together, so they always had company at night time. And generally I could run those two up into the yard. So the one in the yard would see the other one working. It's only when I went out that it might lose it for a while. But there's always another two horses when they're in the yards, because they're all closer together when they all come up into the yard. So the one left behind wasn't stressed. But generally, yeah, you know, separating them and things like that and making them feel like, you know, as far as I can say, you go to work, you get your time off. You don't have to stress all the time, because, you know, you got to remember this, the stress that a horse carries in its off time will possibly come into its on time with you. You know, people like to think that horses, you know, oh, they just forget about the herd and then they'll just get connected to you, and that can happen. But the way I see it is, they got to go and de-stress with their mates, and because it is stressful. Like, you know, no matter how kind you are at starting horses, when I was sort of doing it professionally, what would happen was I had a short amount of time, really, in a horse's life to change the way that horse looked at life, especially these horses that had just come out of the bush and never sort of, you know, had a hand on them. They had to come in for a whole different sort of life, so it was a big deal for them to take on. So, yeah, you had to keep some of their life there for them. But, you know, that's just the way we did it, and I think it worked well. And if you have a good rapport and a good connection in the way you train horses, it won't matter that you're taking them from the herd to do it. They'll accept that and they'll be okay, and it'll probably set them up better for later on in life. Some of the horses that have been separated as foals and wean bad and things like that, they're the ones that separate. They suffer from the most anxiety, separation anxiety, compared to some of the ones that have, you know, have been pretty consistent in their comfortable areas in their life and had a herd and had confidence with people and all that sort of thing. So, yeah, the ones that have been paddocked off and, you know, weaned and taken away from their mum really quickly, they're the ones that suffer longer in their life in sort of, you know, situations that start to cause anxiety. Speaking of that, there is a question in here I think I've seen about that. So D. Murray, she's wondering about how you manage matey behaviour, separation anxiety. My daughter's horse gets anxious and won't listen if she is not with another horse. While she prefers her paddock mates, if we are at events, it can be any horse. What can we do? Okay, one thing I'll do, D, is I'll steer you if you are, well, you're on the members forum, you're on the Facebook, whether you're still on the videos or not. I do a whole full talk on separation anxiety, which covers a lot more about separation anxiety than so there's lots of ideas in that talk, and you just have to go into the live talks and check out live talks and just look for the one that says, I'm pretty sure it's just separation anxiety. And there's a sort of there's quite a long talk on that, but basically, I treat that sort of scenario as you start a long term thing. You can't. There's no one quick certain way you ride and wave a magic crop or wiggle a magic leg that you're going to sort of make the horse suddenly go, oh, okay, I'm done now. You know, so no, you know, my advice is something that's going to be something you might have to commit to for a while. And until you make some changes. And the other thing is, how connected to your daughter is that horse? That is the first question. So you have to be connected. You have to have a connection with your horse. All right. So the horse has to feel confident with your daughter, and feel safe with your daughter. Now, to quench or separation anxiety, if you don't have that, it's going to be harder. So you can get that easier on the ground to start with, and then you have to build it under saddle. The other thing is, how well do all the tools work? Is the horse soft in the steering, soft in the backup? Does it like the reins? Does it like the legs? Or does it dislike the reins? Does it feel trapped in the reins in a normal circumstance? So, you know, when you apply tools to help separation anxiety, then those tools have to work. So I'd like you to think about that, and there's so many ways you can fix that. But I'm going to give you a little sort of thing, you know, like, I don't like methods as such, as in, okay, everybody with, you know, a barn sour separation anxiety horse do this particular thing, because every single horse that you ride will feel a bit different and need a certain amount of rein, a certain amount of turn, a certain amount of, you know, distance, a certain amount of closeness. It's gonna depend on every horse you ride, so it's very hard to give you a sort of cookie cutter, do this. But what I would sort of do is have your horse at home. You can't do it at the show. The show's too much anxiety. You have to have, if the horse does it at home, you have to fix it at home first, where you can sort of control the environment. You have to have a semi-controlled environment. So have the horse that it likes in the yards or wherever, and just have it there. And then just with your daughter, just get your daughter to gently ride it around and where the horse is. So ride it in the area that the horse is, just so that your horse that your daughter's ride, your daughter's horse is just steering softly, steering softly, steering softly, and backing softly. And if your horse is looking soft with your daughter's ideas while it's with the other horse, then you know, well, okay, here's a place that this little horse can join your daughter on their own little island. Though the other horse is there, it feels safe. So it's sort of like the start of a bit of a sweet spot for your horse. The horse feels sweet around its mate with your daughter on it. But what's happening while it's around its mate, it listens to your daughter. So taking it back to the mate helps the your daughter connect with your horse better, if that's what it takes. The sooner you get the anxiety out and the adrenaline out of your horse, the sooner you can have a conversation. So if that means taking the horse back to the other horse, so be it. Safety first, connection first, and then see what you can do with that after you get that. So take the horse back to the horse, connect, ride around a little bit, just make sure your daughter and the horse look happy together. And then when that happens, just ride away from the other horse. When that little pony starts to go, "You ain't gonna go back over there," you just go, "Just come back over here and just have a little cool down over here." And just let the horse stand for a bit, doesn't matter. Ride around a little bit. And then when the horse feels like it's connected with your daughter, just take it out a little bit and it'll come back again. And then you do it again and again. And what'll start to happen is the horse will go, "Well, you don't just take me away and sort of go ride, 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 pull, 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 kick, 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 pull, 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 kick, ride, pull, kick, ride, 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 pull, pull, kick, pull, pull, until eventually I get put back with the horse. You actually take me away and bring me back. You take me away and bring me back. And then after a while the horse will go, "Oh, you're okay, you take me away and bring me back." And then you'll find it might just leave further each time and then get more confidence in your daughter. But what'll happen, what you can start to test is, say for instance, this, you came back to here and just sort of let the horse come down and relax and center in here and just steer a little bit and then stop and just connect and then, you know, just let it feel like it's recentered and your daughter knows that your horse is recentered. Then, that's it, Joe. I was just missing the question disappeared, the above one. That is what I call separation anxiety, connection disability, because with a connection, there's no such thing as separation anxiety. Only a horse can suffer from, a horse is allowed to suffer from separation anxiety when it's on its own, but when it's with a person, it can't suffer from separation anxiety because it's with somebody. So it's connection disability. So you bring your horse back and then eventually what happens is it allows you to point its thoughts out and go out this way. But the idea is when you take it out, you're not kicking it. You're just letting it explore and using the reins just to help it, like, you know, just get its thoughts over here or over there. And then when it really gets a little bit bothered, just take it back and just keep repeating it till that little horse goes further and further away. And then slowly practice the tools when you're out. And what'll happen is you'll get back to here and then you'll go out a bit and back to there and go back and... But then you'll find that when your horse gets back here, your daughter will be able to ride it around here calm without having to go to there. And then all of a sudden there's a new little island for you and your daughter, your daughter and her horse just here. And that can be the spot that your horse starts to relax in and goes, oh, I know the pony's there, I'm a bit closer. But what happens is that little island, that comfortable spot, gets further away from that horse. Until what happens is the connection between your daughter and your horse is strong enough to override the desire to be back with the other horse. So your horse is not separated because it's connected with your daughter. So it separates from the other horse. But that's why you have to practice tools, how you steer, all these other things in a calm environment, how the horse breathes on your daughter and connects with her on the ground, how it follows her ideas, all those things, you know, it's endless. So, you know, I'm adding more and more stuff all the time, and hopefully I'm going to add more stuff sort of that's going to directly sort of show people ideas to get better connections on the ground. But the way I like to work horses, and it's on the subscription, is in a way that gets our horses to sort of think about what they're doing, and we're not pushing them away. We're thoughtful about what we do, and we're thoughtful about the tension that they're carrying and how we release it, and that's all important in separation anxiety. So yeah, but if that's a little task you can try for a little while and see if it helps, because, you know, a horse at a clinic recently, it was a really troubled horse, and I just rode it back, got the lady to ride it back to the gate. She was a young girl riding it, and she rode it very well. It's just go back and stand at the gate. And then when the horse lets down and relaxes a little bit at the gate, just ask for some energy and let it go away from the gate and come back to the gate. Let it relax again. And then eventually the horse goes, I'll go over here and relax, and I'll go over there and relax, because all she had to do was release the tension in the horse. And once the tension was released, the horse started to connect with her and go, oh, you understand me, you've relaxed with me and I've relaxed with you in a good spot. Now let's, you know, I feel comfortable. But while she had to take that horse out and tried to take it away, it was trapped away from where it wanted to be, and it felt like the human was trapping it instead of, you know, listening to it a little bit. So, yeah. And for everybody else, there's something I say a lot at clinics, and so you've heard me talk about, you know, anxiety and things like that, and when I've talked about the worry cup, which Ross Jacobs and Harry Whitney have sort of talked about, is so if a horse makes a decision, okay, if you take a horse away from its decision, it's going to get more worry. If you allow it to go towards its decision or its idea, it's going to release some tension. So you might think that the horse, it's a bad idea because you want the horse to go that way and it wants to go that way, but if you allow it to go that way, you're allowing it to release some tension. And then when it releases some tension, chances are it's done that idea. And then you can say, well, here's a new idea. But you're offering the horse a new idea after it's released some tension. If you trap it from that idea and offer it a new idea, then you're adding tension on top of tension. Whereas if you let it go towards its idea, it relaxes a little bit, then put a new idea in. And that's another way to think about when you're riding a horse with anxiety. Very important, that. But we're so used to iPhones and motorbikes and cars and stuff that we want things to work straight away. And they have to work. And when I press the button like this, I don't want the wrong letter to come up, or I'll smash the phone on the ground. Horses aren't like that. You've got to sort of operate them as a brain on legs, not as a machine. Where are we up to? I had to even turn my iPhone on to hold the screen so it doesn't disappear all the time. And you just go into settings to do that, by the way. Lots of things in settings. What was the question I just had, matey? All right. Viv. I'll be seeing you on the weekend, Viv. I'll have my notebook out to make sure you've been doing your homework. When will be the right time to transition Bobby, my standard bred, to canter? So now, I will introduce Bobby. Bobby is Viv's standard bred. She's been working on trying to get a softer, calmer connection. I met Viv for the first time at Equitana, but she's been on the subscription for a little while. But I met her first time in a horse at the last Howlong clinic. So I've just been up to Howlong, and I've been there for 2 4-day clinics. Now Viv's horse was pulling against the reins, a lot. So we managed to sort that out and get a bit of a soft backup and things like that. And we managed to get her to trot around on him and calm down and things like that. Well, calm down reasonably, but he's got a big trot, so he doesn't pace. He's not a standard bred that's pacing. He is trotting, but his trot transition's really big. So when would it be good to transition him to canter? Depends on the ride you want, Viv. If you want to go, fast and get a bit of wind in your hair and have a thrill ride, just go straight away to canter anytime you want and stick the heels in and go. Heel canter. If you want to do it softly, then maybe you might want to wait till you've got a good accelerator and he's better with the reins. So what I'd like to know, Viv, is that you can start to gauge him in the rising trot, that you could sort of take him through, maybe 5 or 6 or 7 gears in the trot, so he can trot really slow on the first step and he can go up a step or down a step and up a step and up a step and then down 2 steps and hold each step that you put him on in a rise trot just using your rising. And I'd like to think that when you squeeze him with your legs, that that you can use a certain amount of squeeze for a certain amount of effort. So most people that come to clinics that I'm helping with transitions, they're using an accelerator that they don't really know how it works. As in, what I mean is, they never know what they're going to get when they squeeze their horse. Sometimes they get a slow walk and a bit of resistance and a bit of narkiness. Sometimes when the horse is energetic, they get it pinging out like 100 miles an hour with the same squeeze. So what you've got to know is, by working on your walk transitions, especially is if you squeeze this much, you get this much. And you know how much squeeze to get exactly what you want. Now, this is not even taking into consideration your seat, but when you generally go to canter, when you're on a big horse like that, you're going to have to use a certain amount of leg. So the leg's going to be the one that sort of gets that horse to step up a little bit. So I want to know that you can squeeze your horse and he goes, just, and you can put different squeeze but get the same breath. Okay, what I mean is not the same breath, the effortless energy, but a little bit more squeeze means more, a little bit less means less, but it's still breathless, like a breath of energy, okay? And when you got that, then you can bring him back to a slow trot, because by taking him up and down your trot using rise up, squeeze up a little bit, rise up, squeeze up a bit, he knows how to go faster and slower in the trot with only this much squeeze or this much seat change, yeah? Or seat change with a little bit of squeeze to help him catch up. So when you sit in the sit trot and you say canter, when you go sit and squeeze, he's going to go, whoa, that's a bigger one. That has stepped me up to canter. So hopefully he can get into such a slow sit trot or slow trot that that when he canters, he may just go into a slower canter. Because if he goes from his fast trot into canter, you'll be going, whoa, full speed ahead, because his trot is full speed ahead. So if he just falls into a canter, he's going to be falling into a fast canter. So if you can really teach him the accelerator, say, yeah, when? I don't know, is the answer. If you listen to the things I just told you and you get them good, then if you get it done by tomorrow morning, then you'll be right. If you get it done by 6 months, then you'll be right. But I don't think it'll be by tomorrow morning. I think it's going to take a little bit of work with him. But it'll be nice to see him this weekend in Melbourne, because you're coming to Melbourne. To Wilchesey, I think that's what it's called. Then I'll be able to help you there and talk a bit more about when you'll be ready for canter. But yeah, you've got to have a really understanding, and the horse has got to have an understanding of the accelerator and control within each gate. And then the walk to trot. So you want a jog to fast walk transition, so that the transition between the walk and the trot is seamless. And you want to know that when you take up on the reins, he's not pulling and he's not worried. That's really important too. So yeah, you can get him to canter earlier if you like, but it just depends, what you want. I'd ride a young horse that's not quite ready to, no, that's ready to canter, but it doesn't have all the tools, because I just let it lope up a hill and just I'll just sit on it and give, and do whatever, you know, go with whatever it's got. But if you don't want to do that, then it's better preparing your horse. Thanks for the question, Viv. That's good. How do you get up? How do you set up to canter on the right leg? Something I've not talked about a lot in, you know, and I've not done a lot of, even on the videos. I will be putting more canter work on, but I just not put a lot of canter work on because there's a lot of fundamentals and stuff that you sort of don't need to go near canter for a while. But the right lead, now I find it simple. Once a horse knows your intention and you know its intention, and you ask for canter, you'll get the exact right lead, even if you ask it by asking with the wrong leg. If the horse didn't understand one leg at a time aids. So, you know, there's a school of thought that if you can get the shoulders out, if you can get the hips in a bit, if you can get all the stars aligned and you know, you sit in the right way and you open the leg up in the right way and you hold your reins in the right way and you put your leg back here in the right way, the horse will go into a left canter or a right canter depending on how you're asked. So, if the horse is mentally thinking left and you align the stars and you align your seat and you align the reins, you align your leg and you align everything and ask for the canter, the horse will throw a left lead because it's thinking left. So if you still got it thinking left, then you align the stars and put the hip over further, you push the shoulder over further, then you say, well, I'll get you. You might just get it accidentally. So it's not the mechanics that determine a canter lead, it's the desire in the horse. So like I teach a young horse just to canter off to the left or canter off to the right without setting it up. I'd set it up by getting it to think in the right direction. Okay, so all you want to know is when you take a left, little bit of a left increment, the horse is thinking left, and then when you're going on that left-hand thought, the horse is still thinking left. So after you've picked up a rein and steered it to the left a little bit, the horse is not going right and leaking out to the right. So after a while, the horse understands your intention. When you pick up a little left rein, the horse will go, oh, left, and it'll be thinking left. And depending on how much left you put on it is where the horse is going to go left. So once you can know that a horse is hooking onto the left and hooking onto the right, you know, with an inside rein, then you just ask for canter and the horse will canter with the left lead or a right lead. Now, when you get to doing straight line and you want to get a right lead or a left lead, then there's going to be a way you're riding that's telling your horse you want right or left, okay, without a full turn. How you do that is up to you. You know, you don't have to, you can ask with two legs, you can ask with one leg, you can, but just at the stage in the reins, you know, you can just get the horse to go, oh yeah, right lead canter and then centre straight, and they won't even hardly turn. They'll just go right thought canter. Right thought canter right, left thought canter left. But they'll just throw a left lead and then you draw your straight line. So, and then later on, if you steer in a particular way with your seat, or you know want to start pushing the hips over to help them, you know, that's things that come later on. But just to get a basic canter lead on a horse, don't worry about the mechanics and start pushing the body parts over, because all the years that I sort of, you know, explored in that sort of area with young horses or getting them ready for canter leads, all I was doing was adding more accelerator, and I was trying to use my leg as a steering wheel to get a faster gear to get my horse to kick out through here, and oftentimes I just stressed them more. So I spent a bit more time at the trot and just steering them, and the walk steering them, and then when they were steering nice, then I just asked for canter when I knew that they were hooking onto that idea, and they'd always give me the lead I wanted, unless they were really, really dominant, leaking through one eye. But either way, if your horse is dominant, that's got a real strong focus eye and really pushes out one side, you don't really want to be trying to mould it up in a shape to canter it off to the left or right. You want to be trying to just work on that dominant eye and teaching the other eye to sort of take up some of the responsibility so you can balance your horse's brain, if you can understand that. So you know, if you've got one eye, a horse that just always leaks out like that, you got to teach it to open this eye up and start going that way, and that's fixed through how you work on the ground and how you steer your horses and how you get them to seek through the reins and, you know, what you offer them after you've turned them and things like that. And that's all part of getting the horse to seek centre or seek the turn and things like that. I hope that makes sense. But when you get to performance and you go into a certain discipline and you're going to start to sit in a certain way for cantilevers, that's all fine. But the most important thing is knowing that you can get their thoughts in the right direction. Now, if you just bear with me, that's most of the questions I had. Did anyone have any questions quickly while they're on live now? Because I may have missed them as they flick up the screen. Don't take very long to flick up. I'm just going to go and find quickly the question. I think it came through on the normal Facebook, which I'll just check. And that's why it's not on the online. That's why I've got to try and just track it down. I was going to answer it specifically for... apologise for this. It's just... oh, I know where the question is. I know Joe's seen it. Joe, you're online. You've seen that question, and it's I thought it was on the... right. No. Got a problem. Anyway, okay, I'm going to answer the question because I've read the question already and I had the answer in my head. Yes, that's Jenny talking to me. Jenny, it is the one we talked about. It's the question about energy and projecting energy into the horse. There's a little thing in my way. I can't see what you said. Sorry, hang on a minute. Oh, here we go. Jenny sent it through to read for me. Geez, she's good. Thank you, Jenny. That's helped me out. Got me out of a pickle. Don't be sorry about asking any questions, by the way. Never, ever, ever feel sorry about asking a question. I don't want anyone to think they cannot ask a question, first of all. So I just got to go back. Did everyone read that question? So when your horse is going around you, similar to a lunge, you're suggesting with your rope and adding a suggestion of impulsion, with three on the saddle, such a flag, a head stimulant, but not drive. Not a drive, but still not using your energy up and down. Breathe, I have learnt differently. Okay, so I'll go through it. So energy, and this is a common one because people aren't wonder this, and I was actually with a lesson today, which was sort of, you know, talking about a similar thing about energy. So, at some stage we want to project energy and we lift our energy and our horse energizes. So when our horse is on a lunge, okay, we want to be able to lift and lift our leading hand, so a bit of feel sort of actually presents through the rein or the rope of the horse. And as we lift our energy and leading hand, it all lifts together and the horse should lift forward with that energy. So for a horse that's never understood lift with energy like this, we have to have a way of teaching it. So there was a lesson online videos where I was tapping a horse on the back to get energy. So I just lift, tapped. So that was one way. That's just one way of just sort of presenting. Now, that way was deliberately more so for getting a horse to understand that stimulant on the body means move forward. Now, what you can do with that is you don't have to use your lift of energy. Just teach the horse to walk off a tap on the rump. And that's one way of just saying legs mean go, but it's on the rump or the back or something. It's just a stimulant bump means move forward if you want to present energy to a horse. And then if you really want your horse to understand a bit of energy from your lift, then you'll go lift, tap. Now, but you've taught the horse to walk off the bump first, so you've already fixed number three. That's working. So then when you go lift and bump, the horse goes, oh, that lift means you're going to ask for energy, so I'm going to move forward. So that's a way of doing energy without a steering wheel. When I lift my energy, I'm going to use my phone as an example. That's the modern day horse, okay? Now, a lot of people, they project their energy, they'll be standing here and watching their horse go around like that. And when they energize their horse, they energize and they project their energy into the horse like that to make it pop out like that. I don't do that. I project my energy that way. So I go, I'm lifting that way. And the horse goes, so am I. So am I. Okay? So my energy is going around the corner where I'm wanting the horse to go, or in a straight line I'm wanting the horse to go. So what I want you to think about is, you're pointing your energy that way so you're not doing the alpha thing and pushing it into your horse, because they don't like you pushing into them and they know when you're pushing into them. So you're just projecting and you just say the horse lift like you would under saddle. So when I'm teaching a horse to lift through the leading hand, if I don't want to teach them, well, I don't have to, but generally I like them leading first. So I was doing, and Jo's online here and she was at the last clinic, so with her particular horse, she had a horse that she was training that was really hard to lead. Like, not hard to lead, but it was hard to, like, loosen up and trot forward in the lead. So what I did with her and him is I got him to lead better. So, because a lesson we broached upon but didn't sort of fully complete, but we started to get him to come through and lift through with Joe standing, like, here and going lift through there. So first we were teaching him to lift through the lead rope. So we were saying lead up, just pop the flag a bit till he loosened and popped through the lead rope, and we were just walking out in front of him, leading in front of him. And then when he was leading up real soft in front, then we took him shorter and just said, lead like that, pass me a bit on a shorter lead. So he knows that when you take that lead and push it forward, he floats forward. And then we would just teach him to walk around us on a circle closely with a close feel and just pull the lead forward, and he should be able to trot through that lead around you on a small circle with you just holding him close. And that means you can push that leading hand into him, and he knows that the leading hand and that feel presenting forward like that makes him want to trot up. So that one you can teach him without lifting your energy, but ultimately when you're on a lunging circle or a small lunge circle to start them, I always start them small. I don't start all horses on a small lunging circle, but once they're at a stage I'm teaching him to lift into a trot or something like that, I like to teach them slow so I can push on the leading rope and just lead them through. But what you find as you push into your leading hand, you're going to be lifting your energy into it. So that will start to be body language. And then soon, when your horse gets understood that you lift that leading hand and they feel that little bit of feel coming through the rope and they see you lift, that they're to lift with you. So then when you get them out on a long lead, you can't really pull on their head. But by that time, when you lift up that rope and leading hand and your body lifts into it, they lift and they go forward. So that's where the body language comes into play. But I didn't teach them through body language first and then feel. I taught them through lead, lead, lead through feel. Now let's going to put the body language in and say, let's lead. Okay. The other way with the stick on the back was just another way. It was just another way of going about something. For some people, there's a way of doing certain things that are easier. And you can still help horses. They can lift forward, but then that little tap on the back is like another leg aid to say move forward. So you're just teaching them something else as well, but it also will help with the lift of energy. The problem with the stick on the back is I don't like people just picking up the stick to chase them. I like to keep it on top of them. It's just like a person riding it. It stays there all the time. It just provides a stimulant. It doesn't provide a visual, or it's coming up to chase you. So with sticks, I don't like the stick going up and then going back down to sort of, you know, when you put your stick up, the horse goes. When you put it down, it stops or things like that. Because I don't want the horse is running away from it when it comes. Just trying to think if I missed anything there. So, and if you go to chasing your horse and not leading it through, don't worry. The leading that you didn't do will come and nip you in the butt somewhere along the way in the training, whether it's in the steering when you start riding it, whether it's leading onto a horse float or something like that. So if you choose to drive your horse too early when you haven't taught it how to lead or lead through or steer out and things like that, you will be possibly cutting a corner. And if you cut that corner, well, eventually you're going to have to go back and fix it. So I'd fix the corner and get your horse leading through nice, and then when you lift it through like that with energy, it'll know how to do it really nicely. So much the same as riding. It's a sort of similar principle. You know, some people, when they lead off their horse, they energize and then they pick up the feel and then their horse trots up with them. Whereas I pick up the feel, I feel the horse liven up through the rein, and then I'll step off and go, because I don't want the horse to trot off with me before I've picked up the feel, because there's so many horses that don't have life in the reins, they don't have life in the lead rope. And one of the hardest things to teach a horse is to pick up life in its body through the reins. It's not the hardest, but it's common that there's a lot of horses that they're mad, they're berserkers, they run like anything, but there's no life in the reins. The reins don't activate their brain and go, what would you like me to do? And you don't feel it through their body when you pick up the reins. And when you pick up a lead rope, you don't feel it through their body. So to teach them that, it's very important to teach them that. And if you bypass it, then, well, as I say, you cut a corner, you're going to have to go back and fix it. So when you're riding, just to go on from that, is when you're riding, you don't teach the horse your seat then your legs, you teach him legs. And then almost some horses, I say, I don't own a seat. What's a seat? I don't know. I don't have one of those. I just sit up here like a couch potato, and I don't have a seat. And then the horse goes, well, you don't own a seat. I must have to listen to your legs. And I go, yep, that's all I've got, legs. And then when the horse goes, oh, I listen to legs and I like legs and they're great and I can, and I'm reasonably refined in the legs, then you go, oh, by the way, I own a seat now. Would you like to listen to my seat? Because then when you use your seat, you've got a really nice leg aid to back up your seat, opposed to going seat, legs. And because the seat didn't work, you're going to a tool to help the seat that technically doesn't work very well either. So, and also for horses that don't like legs, if they don't like the legs, then they associate the seat with a tool that they don't like. So if they don't know you have a seat, then use your legs until they like it, then they'll like the seat because they'll like your legs. So if that all makes sense, it's a bit confusing, but because I said it makes sense in my mind, but yeah, it's just something to think about. And generally, a lot of things, you teach the horse number three first or number four first, and then you go back to number one, two, three in order. But generally, you've got to start backwards. So the last tool that you're going to use to reinforce the one that didn't work, works. And works well. As in, the horse is not frightened of it. And is not still at a stage that it sort of goes, oh, there comes the legs, I hate the legs. Okay, so same with leading and things like that. Don't sort of chase your horses up when they can't lead, because I have a feeling that they still won't be able to lead, and also they've got to search in the lead rope a lot. So have that make sense to lifting your energy? It's because I add energy into horses and more body language and more intention in energy, but a lot of times when people question it at clinics and stuff, I say, well, I'm working on the steering wheel at the moment, because I'm not going to sort of show the horse how to energize, or this particular horse how to energize, because it doesn't know how to steer very well. So I'm not going to add a lot of energy cues or things like that till the horse can steer really accurately. So yeah, thanks everybody, thanks for surviving my excellent IT skills and my stops and blips, but anyway, I hope I got the horsemanship message across. And yeah, if anyone wants to come and watch over at the Equestrian Centre here, it's on for the 2 days, 8 till sort of 4:35 in the afternoon. And yeah, so you're more than welcome to come across. Thank you, everybody. And thanks for everybody that I've just seen at the clinic. I've seen you all up there. I haven't gone through and said hello to everybody because I've actually deliberately made a habit of not saying individual hellos to every person, because if I start getting a lot of people I know, I sort of try and talk about, and it gets me a little bit distracted. I don't try and be rude. It's just a thing that I started doing. But yeah, thanks everybody for coming on. I've seen your names come up, and it sort of makes me smile when you're up there. So thank you. Bye.